Hi, Matt here. Before we get started, two quick opportunities for us to interact. This Thursday, February 26th at 8 a.m. Pacific, I'm hosting an AMA, Ask Matt Anything, in our Think Fast, Talk Smart learning community. I'd love to see you there. And also, don't forget to take advantage of our Valentine's Day free Coach Matt AI offering. Join our learning community at fastersmarter.io/learning. Now, a word from one of our sponsors. Their support allows us to bring you quality content free of charge. Hi, Matt here. I recently have done some international travel, and I'm always amazed when people can speak the language of the country they're visiting. So for my upcoming trip, I'll be using Babbel, my go-to app for science-backed language learning. Babbel lets me practice real-life conversation, step-by-step, without the stress. It helps me build the confidence to speak up when it matters, from ordering a coffee or chatting with new friends. However you learn best, by listening, speaking, reading, or writing, Babbel adapts to your style and keeps you motivated with personalized learning plans, real-time feedback, and progress tracking. Right now, Babbel is offering up to 55% off your subscription at babbel.com/TFTS. That's Babbel, Babbel.com/TFTS to get up to 55% off. Rules and restrictions may apply. What do you get when you combine warmth and assertiveness? You get a likable badass. My name is Matt Abrahams, and I teach strategic communication at Stanford Graduate School of Business. Welcome to Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Today, we're excited to speak with Allison Fregale. Allison works at the University of North Carolina's Business School. She studies and teaches determinants of consequences of power, status, and influence in organizations, conflict resolution, and negotiations. And she focuses on the verbal and nonverbal elements of communication. Her newest book is Likeable Badass: How Women Get the Success They Deserve. I could think of no better person to interview Allison than our own executive producer and likable badass, Jenny Luna. Here's Jenny.
Hi, Allison. It's so great to have you on Think Fast, Talk Smart.
Awesome to be here.
In your book, you write a lot about power and status, and we've talked about both extensively on this show. But tell me how you define each. And something you wrote in your book that really caught my attention was, it's less than ideal when we have this power first, status second mentality.
So power is controlling resources that have value to you, value to others. So money is a resource. The ability to hire and fire is a resource. You hold car keys and your teenager wants to drive the car, that's a resource. So you are in control of something that has value to you and other people. That is how psychologists generally talk about power. Status is how much you're respected and highly regarded by other people. Power and status have some things in common. One is they're both sources of influence. If you control the information, if you control the budget, if you control my performance review, I'm much more likely to do what you say because those resources matter to me and I want them. So you are going to have some influence over what I do. Similarly, if I look at you and I think, I really respect you and value you, I'm much more likely to listen to what you say. I'm going to trust that your ideas are good. So power and status are both sources of influence. And they're also similar in that they are fundamental human needs. All human beings want to be respected. All human beings want to have some control over resources that matter. Not necessarily everything, but they want to control something. The difference is that, one, you can control resources even if people oppose you. With status, it's a judgment in other people's minds. You can't steal it. You can't have it without their willing consent. You only get as much status as other people think you have and other people want you to have. This is one important difference. And the other one, which you were talking about, that I talk about in the book, power first, status second. There's no doubt that we have talked about power and coached people for a long time on getting more power. There's a mentality that I hear, and some people will even say it out loud. As long as I can have the resources, if I can be in charge, if I can be paid, if I can advance, if I can get to be in control, I don't really care if people respect me or not. Like, I don't really care what they think about me because I'm winning. I get what I want. It doesn't feel good to not be respected. But the challenge with status is that it makes power a lot easier to achieve and it makes power a lot easier to use, meaning we generally don't want to give resources to people what we don't respect. Why would I give valuable things to you if I don't respect you? So when we are not respected by our audiences, it makes acquiring power to advance, to get paid, things that I talk to people a lot about, particularly women, makes them a lot harder to achieve. And even if you have the power, you get a lot more resistance because we don't like power being in the hands of people we don't respect. And so the experience of having power and lacking status ends up being a very miserable experience for most people.
It sounds like we want to focus on getting the respect of our audience and people first.
They're both important. But if you ignore status and you just are pursuing a life of power, one, you're not going to be that successful. And even if you do succeed, you're going to get a lot of pushback. Whereas if you pursue status before or at least alongside power, everything is going to fall into place, right? People are going to be much more willing to give you those resources. And when you have them, people are going to be much more interested in allowing you to use them and doing what you say. It's not to downgrade power and say power is not important. It is. We've been talking a lot about it relative to the very little conversation we have about status, which is not only important, it's also essentially a prerequisite. If you are respected by your audience, all the other good things are just going to start to come a lot easier.
This show, it's all about communication. And our audience really likes tools and techniques that they can start applying to their life right away. So what are some tactics for speaking and then even some nonverbal ways of communicating that you think we can use to be more likable and more badass?
So I'll take a step back and answer your question, which is, as it said, likable, badass, catchy term, but it's referencing something specific. It is referencing where does status come from? And so the idea is that this is a communication process. I show up in the world and I do something. And if it convinces you that you respect me, what convinces you that you should respect me? Two things. One is, do you care about people other than yourself? So if I communicate to my audience that I care about them and at least care about somebody that's not just me, we respect that. We don't want to interact with selfish people or competitive people who are going to hurt us. We want to interact with people who are going to make our lives better. So that's one thing we have to communicate. Second, people can rely on us, that we know what we're doing in some capacity. Even if I think you care, if I can't trust you to execute anything well, I'm not really going to respect you because I can't depend on you. So likable and badass, psychologists would call it warmth and assertiveness. I need to convince you that I care, and I can take charge of my environment, and I know what I'm doing. Those are your two communication challenges to build your status. You asked about words and verbals and nonverbals. It can come through those behaviors. It can also come through actions, all different ways in which we show up. What are nonverbals that are going to convey warmth? Smiling conveys warmth. Eye contact conveys warmth. So mimicry conveys warmth. If you cross your legs and I cross my legs, that's a warmth behavior. Assertiveness, control of our environment, faster rates of speech, what we call a shorter response latency. There's always a gap between when you stop speaking and when I start. And the shorter that gap, the more assertive I'm perceived to be. I didn't have to think very long about my answer. I had it ready to go. It's a sign of capability. Contact is a sign of warmth, but it is also a sign of assertiveness. When I first started doing this kind of status work, I looked at the paraverbal cues. I'll use women because women are often counseled. Don't use all the hedges and disclaimers and tag questions. That stuff's bad. Do the more direct communication. The less direct, when I hedge, when I put in disclaimers, when I turn sentences into questions, that does build warmth. It's seen as a warmer behavior. But the more assertive, there are no filler words. I say exactly what I mean. Every statement ends in a period. Every question ends in a question mark. That behavior is seen as more assertive. So those kinds of behaviors that we exhibit do affect people's belief that we care about them and that we know what we're doing. Those are not the only ways. There are all kinds of other things that we do. The content, for example, of the communication is also really important for signaling those things.
It sounds like there's a bunch of tools as we approach different situations and different people when we're trying to either show power, warmth, and both at the same time.
There's the non-negotiables and the negotiables. The non-negotiable is every time you show up in front of an audience, whether that's an audience of one an audience of many, whether it's in person or virtual on social media, whatever your audience is, when you show up in front of them in ways that convey you care about them and you know what you're talking about, you will build status. That's the non-negotiable part that everyone is trying to achieve. How do I do that? That's where you have infinite ways. And so those tools that you talk about, verbal and nonverbal communication, it's good to be aware of them because you want to know, do I have behaviors that are working for me? Or might I actually have some habits that I'm not particularly aware of that are detracting from my status? And I don't even know that I do it. One example that I've been made aware of is self-deprecating. So I actually voluntarily put out a statement that says, I am terrible at something. People do that all the time. If you tell somebody you're not very good at something, they generally believe you. And so you're saying, I'm not capable in this domain. And we do that for a variety of reasons. Sometimes we do it to convey warmth, to say, oh, I'm not better than you. Look at all my mistakes too. Sometimes we do it as a form of humor. But it's all to say that many times we might be doing something that is detrimental to building our status, and we're not aware of what it is. And therefore, we're not even in a position to decide, is this authentic and true to who I am and I'm sticking with it anyway? Or no, I actually think I should change that.
Another thing we talk about on the show is feedback. When we're trying to see how we show up, we may be missing things and having big blind spots. You write a lot about mentorship and having a mentor. I imagine a big part of that is getting feedback on things like how we show up.
Yeah, my big thing on mentorship is at every stage of your life, you should have mentors and you should be mentoring other people from your first day in the workforce, if not before, and certainly your last day. We always need to be doing both. And on the getting mentorship side, yes, one of the things that I have found is that people who find it fairly easy to communicate likable badass, to communicate assertiveness and warmth at the same time, almost always without fail will tell me that they lucked into a mentor early in their life or career that modeled that for them. And that mentorship shouldn't just be something we luck into by chance. For me, I talk about this a lot, that my advisor, when I went to Stanford, when I got my PhD, is a woman. And what was interesting was I signed on to work with her because of content expertise, that she was an expert in organizational psychology in the areas where I also wanted to develop expertise. I didn't pick her because I thought she could teach me a lot about building status and navigating reputation and things like that. But when I think back on what did she teach me that has been most impactful in my career, it's not the academic stuff. But what she was really brilliant at doing was thinking about with intention the relationship between how she communicated with her audience, her words, her actions, her verbals, nonverbals, all of that, and what that would bring to her. And she was able to articulate that to me at a young age of, here's how you need to think about your audience.
So it sounds like we want to look for people who emulate what we're looking to be more so than have the job or the role that we currently have. I've been really looking forward to talking with you because I just started a new job. In my new job, I'm filling my calendar, coffee dates, forming relationships, walking meetings, getting to know people. And the first thing I'm noticing is in my former role, there was a lot more small talk, a lot more relationship building that came in these early meetings. My new role, people cut right to the chase. They want to just talk business. There's no personal questions or really foundation to be laid. So I would love to hear some advice from you on, do I revert and push that cultural way of getting to know people and trying to set relationships, or do I go more for the mimicry and meet people where they're at?
Try a combination of both. You can experiment. You can change a variable. You can see what happens. You don't have to do one thing consistently with every person forever. So what might I try? We often follow people's lead. So if you go in and you are the first mover in the conversation and you start with a couple personal things or a couple of questions, you can see what response you get. If you are quiet when you walk in and they cut straight to the business, it might feel more awkward at that point to be like, wait, let's go back a minute. You can try to control the conversation from the beginning while still being sensitive to conversational norms, where you get a sense of someone says, I've had enough of this line of questioning and they're ready to move on. The second thing you can think about is you're playing a repeated game. So if someone in an initial interaction is very focused on the task at hand and you think, wow, there wasn't much opportunity there, what else could I do for a second round? People's lives are largely online. So you can, in a very appropriate way, stalk somebody and learn a lot about them that gives you an opportunity in the next interaction to lead with something that might get them interested in talking about things that are a little more personal. That could be from looking at their social media, reading their bio on the company website. It could be talking to people who know them. And what you would be looking for is points of similarity. If we look at psychology, right, greatest basis of liking and attraction that psychology has ever found is similarity. We like people who are like us. When you find the thing that they have in common. Obviously, when you're trying to highlight similarities, you have to be authentic. You can't pretend to like things you don't. It's going to come across as phony. It's going to destroy the relationship. But you can also be very strategic in looking for opportunities. So in the book, I tell a story of another academic, Greg Northcraft. I know Greg through Maggie Neal. Greg and Maggie were assistant professors back at Arizona together long before I met her. And then I come into his circle as well. And so what he tells me is that one of the things he feels like he did really well in navigating his life as a professional in academia is developing personal connections with people by figuring out genuine points of similarity. And he said, look, I love to golf. And so the first thing I always try to do is figure out, does the other person like to golf? Because I know if I can meet a fellow golfer, I can make a friend. And if I can make a friend, I'm going to have a much easier time getting what I want and need because people will do things for friends that they won't do for strangers. He develops a consistent habit of trying to find the common points between him and his audience wherever he goes. He tells me this story, which I relay in the book. And he said, the time that it worked better than ever was he had to go meet somebody on campus. The subject was scarce resources, scarce money. Every reason to think there was going to be a bit of a fight because everybody wants the money. He said, but I did something intentional. I had the status to ask this guy to come to my office, but I deliberately said, let's schedule the meeting in your office. He said, I'll come to you. And he said, I did that for one reason only. I wanted to scan his physical space because then I could learn about him and then I could strike up a personal connection. So he says, I'm shaking his hand. And as I'm doing it, I'm looking over his shoulder, like what's in this guy's office? And he says, you're not going to believe it. In the guy's office behind the desk is a hole-in-one trophy. Said, if you're a golfer and you ever see a hole-in-one trophy, two things are true. One, there's a great story behind that trophy and the person behind the desk is just dying to tell you what it is. So this idea of how do I get people to chit-chat, he made the opening. I see you've got a hole-in-one trophy. You've got to tell me about that. And he knows the person can't wait to tell. And he says, we spend 55 of our allotted 60 minutes chatting golf. And by that point, we are friends and we take 5 minutes and we solve our money problem amicably in those last 5 minutes. And so I tell that story, I tell the book, I tell it all the time in front of audiences. And what I love about it is it's a beautiful blend of authenticity and strategy, right? If I don't know somebody, I've got to learn about what they care about and I've got to figure out our points of common interest and I've got to bring them into the conversation. And I'm going to do that deliberately with intention by going to someone else's office, by asking questions, doing the homework, et cetera. That's where you can start to bring those two together using behavioral science and who you truly are, merge the two, and you get this very fun, authentic way to live that also reaps large benefits by people finding the ways in which they see themselves in you.
I love that because if we think we're going to be strategic and intentional, we often think that we don't get to be authentic and be ourselves. And so that's just such a beautiful way to show that we can do both where it benefits everyone.
I spend a lot of time right now and in this stage of my career speaking to women specifically. But what I'm about to say does not just apply to women, but it applies to anybody who looks different than the majority of people around them. I always say, if you look different and don't take any intentional action, it's possible that what you're communicating unintentionally to your audience is, I am different than you. We don't have anything in common. So if we show up and we look different and that's all there is, and we just get down to the business at hand, what our audience might conclude is we're not the same. And that is not going to be to our strategic advantage because human beings like similarity. Everybody has to do this. Something to be aware of is between any two human beings, there are genuine points of similarity and connection. If you can find them, you can rise above any other perceived difference and show people the true things that you have in common.
Yeah, so we need to highlight that difference right away and bring that up rather than try to sweep it under the rug or pretend it's not there. Something I've also been thinking a lot about in my new role is first impressions and how important those are. But I'm curious, let's say we didn't set the right first impression. I didn't maybe get that warmth and assertiveness out in the first meeting. How bound am I to that first impression that I'm making?
You're bound to it, right? First impressions change. You've changed your mind about people, so they'll change their mind about you. But if you use yourself as a starting point and say, when I've changed my mind about people, I don't change my mind as easily as I formed my initial impression. So it might not be one more meeting. It might be two, three, and four. I might have to work on it a little bit. That's one thing to keep in mind. Second thing is another negotiation tactic that can be useful here is to use an agent. Sometimes we may not be the best messenger if we feel like we got off perhaps on the wrong foot or I wasn't able to show up in the assertive, warm way that I wanted. Maybe my first meeting with somebody was about a disagreement or a conflict. How am I going to convey that? Who really respects me that also has the respect of my audience? How can I use that person to help build my status, help change my reputation? If you've ever had an awkward interaction with somebody and you find out every other person you talk to loves them and thinks they're spectacular, and then you think, maybe I should give them a second chance. The more people that are out there saying, right, oh, Jenny's amazing, Allison's amazing, the better off. So that's something you could think about doing very deliberately is to say to somebody who really does respect you and value you, say, I'm new here. I don't have a lot of opportunity to interact with this person, or maybe our first interaction really wasn't that smooth. Can you help me? Can you, when it feels natural, talk about the great work that I'm doing and use them? And so a lot of times it's just about changing the messenger.
We'll be right back to finish our conversation. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a message from our sponsors. These sponsorships support the cost of making our show, allowing us to bring it to you free of charge. Hi, Matt here. Career coaching often comes through our workplaces, which can be a great starting point. But sometimes you want space to focus on your priorities, not your organization's. That's where Strawberry.me comes in. It's career coaching you choose for yourself. You answer a few quick questions, get matched with a vetted coach, and in many cases, you can start within 24 hours. You choose the coach, you decide the goal, and you get to talk honestly about what actually matters, whether that's a promotion, a pivot, burnout, or even leaving. There's no HR involved, no performance review lens, and if it's not the right fit, you can switch coaches. What I appreciate is the sense of agency. When you're feeling stuck, waiting rarely helps. If you've been thinking something needs to change, you don't need permission to explore that. Go to strawberry.me/TFTS. It's coaching focused on you. Think of it as therapy for your career.
So at the end of every episode, we ask each guest three questions, two that we've been asking everybody and then one that we make up specially for you. Are you ready?
Yes.
So I'm curious, what are you excited to study next, or what's bubbling up to the surface for you now?
So what I've been doing a lot on is thinking about this idea of power without status. It's a downer because it is a lot about the bad things that happen to us when we have power without status. So I've still been doing a lot of work in that space to show how important status is in being able to live the life. So I've been doing a lot of work, the incivility and the mistreatment that happens to people. And again, although it's a bit of a downer, one of the things that I'm very focused on is how do we retain women throughout the career life cycle, particularly in what is like a leaky middle, where women, after having some success and advancing in organizations, are often leaving at like mid to senior levels. And it has a lot to do with what we see in terms of surveys of women feeling like as they get more power, but if they haven't successfully navigated status, they're encountering more interpersonal mistreatment, worse work environments. And that is prompting them to say, I don't want to do this anymore, and I'm exiting. So I'm still doing that work. And what I'm excited about is bringing that over to think about how do we create a better experience for women in the workforce at mid to senior levels that are going to keep them advancing and keep better representation at the most senior levels for women. Bringing those two things together is something that I'm excited about right now.
Awesome. I'll look forward to reading your next book as you move forward with that research. Who is a communicator you admire and why?
Maybe because she is top of mind, but Maggie, my advisor, maybe well known to this audience, but not worldwide necessarily famous. She taught me more than anything how to be very clear and assertive about what it is that you want, while also never faltering from the importance of doing right by other people. I think that's why she's able to be very successful. And I feel like a lot of times still to this day, 25 years after I met her, when I confront things that I think are difficult communication challenges, I'm always thinking, well, what would Maggie do here? And there are still times where I call her and I say, my first instinct is to do this. And then she would say, let's think about that. Like, how would your audience react to that? She's been very good at doing that and also teaching me to get into the head of my audience. That curiosity, a lot of that came from her.
Allison, what are three ingredients that go into a successful communication recipe?
Authenticity, strategy, and curiosity.
Tell me a bit more about curiosity.
Communication is going to be a communicator and a receiver. The more curious you are about your audience, the better able you are to communicate in a way that's going to land, going to resonate. When I think about people who are really good communicators, or when I think about times when I've done a good versus a bad job, the more curious I am about trying to understand my audience, it informs the other two, right? Authenticity is obviously your version of you, but it informs the strategy. So we have to get curious about other people.
Thank you so much. This has been a great conversation, Allison. I've learned a lot and I'm excited to apply some of the things we've talked about to my new job too.
Amazing. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. To learn more about status and power, please listen to episode 12 with Deb Gruenfeld. And to learn more about the work of Maggie Neal, please listen to episode 15. This episode was produced by Jenny Luna, Ryan Campos, and me, Matt Ibrahams. Our music is from Floyd Wonder, with special thanks to Podium Podcast Company. Please find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe and rate us. Also, follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram. And check out fastersmarter.io for deep dive videos, English language learning content, and our newsletters. Please consider our premium offering for extended Deep Thinks episodes, Ask Matt Anythings, and much more at fastersmarter.io/premium.
Hi, Matt here. I can't believe that this month is the 6-year anniversary of Think Fast, Talk Smart's launch. As we start the new year, we're excited to bring you even more ways to learn, practice, and grow your communication and career skills. We'll now be releasing 8 episodes a month, coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. For those of you who like to watch your podcasts, we are now posting full video versions of each episode on both Spotify and YouTube. We're moving to a weekly email that shares specifics about the current week's shows and previews what's coming in the future. If you're not subscribed yet, head to fastersmarter.io and hit subscribe. When you do, you'll also start getting our monthly newsletter. Fastersmarter.io is also the place to go for transcripts and show notes for each episode. And under the resources menu, you can find English language learning content for each episode. Speaking of languages, I'm excited to share that a Hindi version of the show is now available. You can get access to our extended Deep Thinks episodes and listen ad-free by subscribing on Apple, Spotify, or at fastersmarter.io/premium. I'd love for you to join us on our Think Fast, Talk Smart learning community, where people from all over the globe are coming together to develop and hone their career and communication skills by taking asynchronous lessons, participating in learning quests, enjoying live author book talks, and getting individual guidance from my AI coach at fastersmarter.io/learning. Be sure to look at our social media channels for our video shorts, frameworks, infographics, and protocols. You can also help us by giving us a 5-star rating and positive review. 2026 is going to be a great year for becoming more confident, clear, and compelling in your communication and career. As always, thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.